All right, KISS Army, welcome to the KISS FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a KISS-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy.
Anyway, Gary, good to see you again.
Great to see you.
We didn't get a chance at the last couple of Rocket Rub Pod Expos, but this year, I don't want to talk about Cyndi Lauper or Nelson or any of your other stuff. I got to do just KISS.
Okay.
Because it's the 30th anniversary of Paul Stanley's solo tour this year. So
yeah.
I wanted you to be the first one of the band members
mm-hmm.
that I hopefully get a chance to talk about, reminiscing about how that tour came together. Now, I know you did keyboards for the Crazy Nights tour,
yeah.
but you had some ups and downs during that. You left the tour at one point
right.
and then came back for the European leg. How did you find out that Paul was going to be doing a solo tour in February of 89?
Well, like you said, I had been on the Crazy Nights tour, then I left, then came back for the Summer Monsters of Rock tour. So I was actually back in the circle at that point. And Paul just called me up and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing a club tour, as you know, a solo club tour. Four shows, just go out and have some fun, put together a completely different band, but he wanted me to be a part of it.
Right.
And he wanted to get to play some of the stuff from his solo record that he never got to play and just go out and have some fun.
Was there any friction? Because
none.
There's been some challenges with your separation from the band during the tour.
No.
But
at that point,
all smooth.
At that point, everything was beautiful. And to be honest, I think I got along better with Paul on his solo tour than any other tour that I ever did with the
right.
band. Because he was in a different place mentally. Like he was just there to have fun. There was no pressure. There was no none of the competition for the spotlight with Gene.
Right.
You know, he was in the spotlight, and we were there to support that and do as good a job as we could, and we had a blast doing it.
Right. So the approach was just he just called you up out of the blue. You
mm-hmm.
had already left. Did you have any anticipation of working with KISS again after the Crazy Nights tour, or had you moved on and just gotten that call?
No, you know, the stuff that happened during the Crazy Nights tour was pretty much nipped in the bud when I had gone out for the start of the tour and then was sent home around Christmas time, and then I was brought back for some shows in the U.S. and then sent home again. And when they called me to do the summer, the Monsters of Rock that mm-hmm. summer, we kind of worked out everything that, you know, all our differences for what had happened on the Crazy Nights tour.
Right.
And we worked out our business and set things right, and I never had another issue with that again. And so the summer, the Monsters of Rock tour was amazing. That was a great tour.
Big markets though in Europe, obviously.
Yeah. And you know, and when we did the Monsters tour, they had kind of revamped the set list quite a bit
right.
and pulled out a bunch of the old classics that they hadn't been playing, like Deuce and Strutter and songs that weren't in the show, and they decided to give the fans what they were actually asking for all the time, which was a lot of those old classic songs. And so we killed it. We weren't the headliners, but we were probably a lot of the times the you know, the best received band on the bill.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now that tour, obviously, they did bring back the classics, but on the on Paul's solo tour, he brought in three songs from his solo album,
yeah.
70 solo album, a couple of rare or obscure songs from the KISS catalog in terms of, I think, Let's Put the Axe in Sex and Hide
right.
Your Heart, which hadn't even been on an album.
Right.
How did the set come together in rehearsals? Did Paul pretty much come in and have a great idea, this is what I want to do, and what the roles of all you guys in the band, how he wanted you to perform, or was it more organic? See how the band worked together and go from there.
I don't really remember, but I would be pretty certain that the song selections were all from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I would probably imagine that we learned more than we actually did, and those decisions were probably made organically when we were in rehearsals and seeing what songs flowed and what songs sounded good and what songs he liked
right.
playing.
obviously Paul already knew you as a keyboard player and how
right.
you could fill the holes,
right.
So to speak, in the set. Did he give you any different direction when working with him in a solo context, or did he just bring you in because he knew how you would fill those holes?
Yeah, that was pretty much the way it was.
Right.
He never really gave me direction. He never really gave me direction with Kiss either. You know, when I was initially hired for Kiss, it was really to play keyboards on the songs that had keyboards. But once I was there, I wasn't going to be happy playing three songs and standing around watching 14, you know?
Right.
So I found a way to play on everything and do it in a way where I wasn't necessarily playing keyboard-type parts that drew attention to the fact that they were keyboards, but it was more about filling in filling in the holes
right.
and just strengthening what was there from them just to make it sound better.
And how did it contrast? I mean, you go from these massive stages on the Monsters of Rock into basically thousand seat, you know, clubs, if you could even describe it as that, you know.
Oh, you mean as far as Paul's tour? That's part of what made it fun. You know, we were on one bus, band and crew,
mm-hmm.
because we had a very small crew, obviously. So we probably only had like four guys on the crew and five in the band. The bus sleeps 12, and so it was tight quarters, and including Paul. Paul was on the bus with us, and we were playing clubs, which, you know, was fun. You know, it's different when you're struggling and you're playing clubs and you're struggling to do that, as opposed to staying at the Four Seasons, pulling up on a tour bus, but playing clubs.
Right.
That are sold out and mayhem because, you know, more people wanted to come there than they could fit. So there's a bit of a different mindset about it, so it doesn't feel like you're stepping down a level. And you know, as long as you gear up for what you're doing and you don't try to stuff a stadium show into a club,
right,
it's easy to do.
Yeah, and there wasn't pyro, there was basically just lights,
yeah,
and then it was the music speaking for itself, which
right.
I think has always been very important
right.
to Paul Stanley, that his music can stand firmly on its own.
Exactly.
But how, you know, compared with like the dynamics of having Gene Simmons and Bruce Kulick and Eric Carr on Crazy Nights, how was it with Eric Singer on drums, obviously, Derek St. James on bass?
Yeah. Well, okay, Eric Singer, he and I hit it off the minute we met, and he's a phenomenal drummer.
Yep.
Probably my favorite rock drummer that I ever
really?
Played with. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a high compliment. I'm sure Eric appreciates hearing that.
I'll tell you what, his playing on the first Badlands record,
is a beast.
Yeah, and that was the record. I mean, they were just wrapping that record up and getting ready to start promoting it when we were doing the solo
right.
tour. So that band was brand new, and it was really, I was a fan. So, you know, but we hit it off. You know, we have the same sarcastic sense of humor and personality, and so we got along really well. And he became my, you know, when you're on a tour like that, you always have one guy that you call when it's time to go eat or go to the mall or whatever.
Right.
And on that tour, he was definitely my buddy.
What about the difference between, say, Bruce Kulick and Bob Kulick on lead guitar? I mean, both of them are incredible players, but
yeah.
they're also very different players.
Yeah, they are. But you know, Bob, I think when it comes to a band like, you know, with Kiss, Bob's playing probably suited the band. If you're looking at it from a trying to sound like the original band,
mm-hmm.
I think Bob was closer to that than Bruce actually was, because his playing was more like Ace than Bruce. And so, you know, he kind of fits somewhere in between the two styles, and I think that was a really good.
He had a great sound, a great
yeah.
tone, but
yeah.
he was closer to Ace's kind of generation,
right.
and Bruce is just a little bit younger,
yeah.
and came up through a slightly different route, so that's
yeah.
kind of the difference that I always felt between the two.
Yeah, Bob wasn't as much as a shredder like Bruce,
mm-hmm.
like I think of Bruce, you know, when I think of Bruce, I do think of that finger tapping.
You know, he's perfect for the Eddie Van Halen,
yeah, exactly.
where, you know, Bob is more kind of a traditional
yeah,
70s,
bend one note and
you
let
know,
it,
Joe
yeah.
Perry, Brad
exactly.
Whitford, you know, that
exactly.
class of player.
Yeah.
You had Warrant opening for you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, did you guys interact with them at all? And,
oh, yeah.
How were they as a act to be on the road with?
Well, again, they were just getting started.
They were young.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were just, I think the first record was just coming out.
Right.
And so they were, they were at the point where they would get to the club at 3 in the afternoon and wallpaper the club with the album covers. And, you know, they were going and doing in-stores and trying to get the record launched. And, you know, they were thrilled to be there because they were all Kiss fans. And so, you know, there were so many bands that came through my time there with those guys, whether it was Paul or Kiss. You know, I have friendships with guys like Joey Allen or Mark Slaughter, you know, from all these guys that opened for Kiss at one time or another, that, you know, Ted Poley from Danger Danger, all those guys grew up being Kiss fans before they were ever musicians. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like on the Hot in the Shade tour, when I had my condo where they hid me, because I was able to be hidden so well, it became a hangout spot for the opening guys. When after they were done, they'd go towel off, and when we were on, they'd come hang out in the condo with me and sing background parts with me. You know, right. So for them, it was fun for Ted to be singing backgrounds on Kiss songs that he grew up listening to.
That's one of the cool things about the videos from this tour, is that you're actually on stage. You know, you're not off stage, or that one Crazy Nights video where you're you know, caught kind of behind the curtain. You see the magician. So that was really nice to see you as a fully kind of integrated and respected member of the band. I mean, regardless of how important what you were doing is on the Kiss tour, here you're a member of a band,
right?
Fully. Did that make you feel better as a musician, obviously, to be kind of fully validated?
Well, you know, it's strange because Kiss is the only band that I ever did the offstage thing for. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, I was fine with it because, A, it was the job description when it was offered to me. It wasn't something that they sprung on me. And I completely understood why they would do it. I wouldn't accept a keyboard player on stage with Kiss. And I'm a keyboard player.
Right.
And so I wouldn't expect the diehard Kiss fans to it never bothered me to do that, and I never really felt like it was a disrespectful thing. But there were other bands in the 80s that had contacted me at the time to do the same thing for them that I said I wouldn't, that I refused to do it for.
Right.
Because to me, they didn't deserve to have that luxury of hiding the keyboard player.
Right.
There were keyboards all over their records, and you know, there was no reason to hide. It would be like, then why don't you hide the guitar player too? I mean, you know, so.
Absolutely.
But with Kiss, it was totally understandable.
What about you as a musician? Did these gigs with Kiss and Paul Stanley, you know, pay benefits for your career and your visibility in the industry? Did you get something out of it on a professional level other than it being a job?
Yes and no. I mean, it was a job first, but hey, look, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you 30, God. Oh, boy. Yeah, 30 years later, if it wasn't for the fact that I did it. So there's definitely benefits. And, you know, it was during my time with Kiss that I got the gig playing with Cinderella. So there's always going to be those benefits because that's the nature of the business. You know, it's all about personal relationships and meeting people. And, you know, and when you're playing with the headliner, you get access to everybody that comes through.
Right.
And so, yeah, I made a lot of friends and a lot of friends that I still have to this day.
And some good memories.
Absolutely.
I'm curious about the catalog. Obviously, Kiss had already started that shift back to the older material that would ultimately create on the Hot in the Shade tour.
Right.
You know, that was a full 17, 18, 19 songs.
Yeah.
You know, really old stuff. Did you have any favorites performing with Paul? I mean, it must, when you listen back in the 80s, we think of Let's Put the X in Sex, and that's not going to be many Kiss's fans pick anymore. What were some songs that you really enjoy playing that you can recall off the top of your head?
I Still Love You is probably
that opening song, which became the opening song on the Hot in the Shade tour.
I Still Love You and I Stole Your Love as well. Both of those were fun to play.
Right.
Yeah, I would say those would probably be the two songs that stick out to me.
And what about Paul's 78 solo album? I mean, there were three songs, Tonight You Belong to Me, Wouldn't You Like to Know Me, and Goodbye, which closed out the set. You know, were those fun to play?
Yes, absolutely. And it was fun to play stuff that had never been played before. You know, because on the Kiss stuff that they had been playing, that we were playing, it was apparent what we were doing different or what we were doing the same, and if there was something that Paul wanted us to do the same. But on those songs, there was no reference. And so, you know, we were able to make, you know, create what we did with them from scratch, as opposed to trying to.
What about the, and were there any songs that you really were grind to get through on a nightly basis? You're like, ugh,
no,
gotta do
I
Let's
can't.
Put the X again. I'm sorry, that's an easy target for me.
Yeah.
I've never been one of my favorites, but it's the best they could do at the time.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that wasn't my favorite either. I don't even want to go into it. But maybe when the mics are turned off. But it was all fun. I nothing sticks out 30 years later as being, oh man, I hated that or anything like that. When that topic comes up, the Paul Stanley solo tour, it's just nothing but good memories to me.
No, and it was over so quickly. I mean, you got to throw in a Zeppelin song in there as well, Communication Breakdown. I mean, Paul had done a whole lot of Love in the 80s a few times with Kiss, but nice to hear him throw kind of that nod to one of his inspirations into the set.
Absolutely. We used to do that at soundcheck every day, even with Kiss. You know, Paul would, when it came time, once everything was dialed in and it came time to play a song, a lot of times it wouldn't be a Kiss song. For the sound check a lot of times.
Every time I've talked to you, you've been very positive about your experiences with Kiss, even when you've described some of the challenges that you went through. Were there any lowlights on this tour that you can recall, working with Paul, other than it maybe being too short?
Yeah, that would be the only thing. I mean, because like I was saying earlier, it started out as four shows, and it quickly grew to, 10 or 12 or however many. And the offers were coming in for Japan and for Europe and all of that stuff, but we ended up having to pull the plug and not accept those dates because it was going to conflict with Kiss.
Right.
And it was going to start conflicting
conflicting with the recording of Hot in the Shade.
Exactly.
What are you working on these days? I mean, you live around Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
You still work, obviously.
Yep.
What's going on in Gary Corbett's life that you'd like to tell everyone about?
I've been doing a little bit of everything. I've done country music. I've toured with a country artist a Nashville country artist for almost 8 years.
Right.
Been doing the scrap metal thing with the Nelson Twins and Mark Slaughter and those and Lita Ford and D. Snyder.
What a great bunch of people.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of niceness, the Nelson guys are some of the nicest human beings anyone can meet.
Yeah.
Mark Slaughter, one of the nicest human beings
Absolutely.
Anyone can meet.
Yeah.
And Lita's a sweetheart, too.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, we just came back from Alaska about a month ago. But we did four shows up there with Kip Winger and Jack Russell with us as well.
That's some great 80s bands there,
Yeah, and, doing those shows, it's so much fun because we're playing three songs from each one of the artists, and so the set is nothing but hits.
Right.
And so it's always a blessing. Michael Sweet has done shows with us.
And it's people like my age is, soundtrack to our teen years.
Exactly.
As we're getting to the age where we want to look back, what a great night out. So God, I'm listening to those songs that played on our Walkman or stereos, back in the day.
And even we have Barry Goudreau and Elliot Easton from the Cars. So to be able to play Boston songs and Cars, we started out as fans too. So for us to get to play those songs, it's a thrill. So
and you're doing what a working musician does. You're working.
Exactly.
Because that's ultimately what it's about, isn't it?
Exactly. At a very early age, my dad instilled that in me, that if you're going to do this as for a living, you can't always make the choices to only do the stuff you love doing. You got to sometimes do the stuff that pays the bills.
Awesome.
But, there's very little in the way of making music with people that ever feels like a job to me. I really struggle to even come up with anything. If you're talking about being on tour and playing.
Right.
I always loved my job.
Well, that's a great way to end. Gary Corbett, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to the Kiss FAQ. And
great to see you.
Hopefully see you next year at the National Rock and Pod.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
So,
thank you for spending time listening to the Kiss FAQ podcast today. All sales are final, there are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the Kiss FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.